From Iowa Public Radio News, this is Under the Golden Dome, a podcast about the legislative session. As of June 6th, 597 Iowans have died from COVID-19. Across the country, the death toll is 108,000. The total number of cases in Iowa is 21,438. Of those cases, 12,673 have recovered. On June 6th, 345 new cases were reported. On March 10th, the numbers were very different. On that day, Governor Kim Reynolds reports 8 cases in Iowa.
What we are now experiencing is consistent with what's happening across the country. The number of tests and positive cases will continue to rise. Community spread is going to continue to increase. We are moving from a prevention phase to mitigation.
In the days that followed, events across the state were canceled. On Monday, March 16th, the legislature met to suspend the session for at least 30 days. During the interim of any session, the Legislative Council, sometimes called the Steering Committee, can meet to make changes. It is composed of 24 members from both chambers. They can shorten the suspension or extend it. The Legislative Council meets via phone conference for the first time on April 9th. Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer makes a motion.
I move the General Assembly remain adjourned until April 30th, 2020 at 10 a.m.
Then, during their April 29th meeting,
I move that the General Assembly remain adjourned until May 15th.
On May 14th, they meet again to push the date to June 3rd. This time, there is more discussion about how things will be different at the Capitol. A memo is released stating the wearing of masks will be voluntary and there may be a health screening for some entering the building.
Mr. Speaker, this is Representative Pritchard. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
House Minority Leader Todd Pritchard asks Speaker of the House Pat Grassley about the proposed health and safety measures.
I've seen the guidance from your office regarding health screenings and access and best practices in the Capitol. Will the health screenings before entering the Capitol, will those be mandatory for all the representatives?
No, they will not.
Will they be mandatory for anybody or?
The health screenings will be for staff as well as members of the public and the lobby that may be entering the building or any other staff.
Grassley says legislators will use their own judgment.
I would say the expectation is that members are acting in a responsible manner, monitoring their own, whether if they were to have any symptoms, temperatures, and using the best judgment and then working with obviously their leadership from our side or your side, you know, if it's one of your members or one of my members, on how to handle those situations moving forward.
Senate Minority Leader Janet Peterson suggests keeping track of legislators' health screenings.
It's my understanding that the public will have to go through the health screening, but it looks as though legislators will be not mandatory. But I do think that we should be able to see who has and hasn't done the health screening, just like we do for sexual harassment training.
Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer says he'll take it under advisement. Democratic Senator Pam Yoakum asks Senator Whitfer more questions.
Let's just say that someone does get a fever while we're there, whether it's a legislator, staff, whatever. Will we do contact tracing then, or how are we going to handle that?
At that point, we'll work with the Department of Public Health and go with the best guidance from there.
Okay. So Polk County is still in that top 10 hot spots of the state. So I'm just curious why we aren't requiring everybody that comes into the Capitol to wear a mask or a face shield for that matter.
Well, we have those available. We're using CDC guidelines, which recommends a mask if you cannot use proper social distancing. And so we expect many, if not most, people will be wearing masks.
Just before the legislature paused, the Revenue Estimating Conference, or REC, provided a number the legislature has to use for fiscal year 2021's budget. By this point, it has been announced the REC will meet before the legislature returns. Democratic Representative Chris Hall, who is the ranking member of the Appropriations Committee, asks if they should request an additional REC meeting later in the summer.
And I'm curious if the cautious language is anticipating need to revisit the budget in later months, or if the legislature is going to be bound to this estimate the same way that it would if a March estimate came in lower than the one in December.
Well, we would have to obviously follow the estimate. I mean, we could make further reductions than what the estimate were to be, but obviously that is going to be the number that's laid out where the starting point would be from the budget's perspective, the way the back to what you said, with the way the reduction, if it is from December to March, would be handled similarly.
On May 29th, the three members of the Revenue Estimating Conference meet via a video stream. Panelist Dave Roeder says normally they meet in December, March, and October.
The governor and the legislative leaders requested that the Revenue Estimating Conference to meet to review our March estimates in light of the pandemic.
In January, the governor makes her budget based on the December estimates. When the REC meets in March, the legislature must take the lower of these two estimates for the final budget proposal. But things are different this year.
If the number we come up with today is less than it was in March, then the legislature must use the May number.
In the early days of the pandemic, the federal government passed the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act. It's known as the CARES Act. Panelist Holly Lyons says the CARES Act money is helping Iowa.
We think that a lot of the federal money that's coming in terms of unemployment benefits and the $600 extra unemployment and the payment protection program are bolstering income tax revenue, potentially.
Part of the CARES Act includes the Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP. This is where a small business can receive a loan that pays for their expenses for 2 months. If the company does not lay off any of their employees due to the pandemic, the loan is forgiven. Panelist David Underwood says while the CARES Act helps, it is a short-term solution.
I guess part of what I'm feeling uncomfortable with is that employment is being held up with the PPP program artificially. Those numbers and the federal subsidy of those wages is going to run out very, very quickly unless Congress acts soon.
Congress has not passed another act similar to CARES, although there are proposals. Dave Roeder says as businesses begin to reopen, the economy should see signs of improvement.
Iowans will be going back to work, and I think it's not like our economy isn't moving. It's we're being held back, maybe because we've not gone through this before. We've not had a situation where fundamentally things in the state are going well, and then for all the right reasons, it was stopped, and now it's a question of getting it going again.
Both Lyons and Roeder project more revenue from income and sales tax than David Underwood.
I know the number of restaurants to get people to come to work increase their wages considerably, but that's temporary. It's kind of combat pay in many industries, and I don't think that's permanent. That's going to go away yet before this calendar year ends. It's not sustainable in many businesses. I think most of the businesses that we're hoping are going to reopen, a lot of those won't. When you get rid of the 4th of July in Clear Lake, you know that you're going to impact a number of businesses and their sustainability.
Each of these panelists wants to find a compromise, so they meet in the middle. Holly Lyons says her colleague David Underwood is making good points about the uncertainty for businesses.
We just don't know what's happening out there. We don't know how consumers are going to react. We don't know how businesses are going to react. Things are opening slowly, but they're opening differently too. So I think until we get a little bit more time under our belt, this is hard.
The three members make some adjustments, and their projected revenue for fiscal year 2021 will be $7.876.6 billion. This is $64 million less than fiscal year 2020. Compared to the March estimate, this is $360 million less. The governor has not submitted a revised budget, and it is likely a revised budget will first come from the Legislative Appropriations Committees. This is Under the Golden Dome, a legislative podcast from Iowa Public Radio. I'm John Pimble.
Like what you're hearing? Make sure to follow Iowa Public Radio on social media for more episodes and share Under the Golden Dome with your friends. Use the hashtag UTGDPod.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, and by the Iowa Bankers Association. Helping Iowans reach their financial goals is what Iowa banks are all about. Discover the genuine difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
On May 25th in Minneapolis, George Floyd, an African American, died on the street while in police custody. An officer kneeled on his neck for 9 minutes. It sparked protests across the country. At some protests in Des Moines, law enforcement is using tear gas and pepper spray. There have been arrests. In some cases, there is property damage.
95% of those individuals, as we support civic engagement, were peaceful.
Democratic Representative Akeo Abdul-Samad speaks during a press conference outside the Capitol on Monday morning. Representative Abdul-Samad lives in Des Moines and went to protests last weekend to mediate between angry protesters and law enforcement.
We have less than 3% of individuals that had a different message, and they hijacked the message that these young people had because their motive was to cause disruption and destroy and disturbance.
President of the Nebraska-Iowa NAACP, Betty Andrews, says voices need to be heard and protesting is part of the process.
We need to address this legacy that started with America's greatest sin, racism, slavery, and all of its babies that have come since. We need to do that, but we need to do that in a way that is strategic. So we must protest insistently and peacefully.
Don't shoot!
Hands up!
Don't shoot!
Hands up!
Don't shoot!
That evening, protesters gather at an event described as Call to Action on the steps of the Iowa Capitol. Andrews addresses the crowd.
Action means showing up with your bodies. Action means standing in the streets and making sure that your voice is heard. Because Black Lives Matter, say it with me, Black Lives Matter! Black Lives Matter! Black Lives Matter! Black Lives Matter! Yes!
Early in the week, Polk County had a 9 o'clock curfew. There are protests and marches every night, most going past the curfew.
We can't ignore what's been going around the country.
Democratic Representative Ross Wilburn is one of the 5 African-American representatives in the Iowa legislature. On Thursday morning, these 5 representatives stand on the steps of the Capitol with other supportive representatives and senators.
We can't ignore the ask for us as representatives and senators to do something, a call for action.
Representative Wilburn says they have a proposal called More Perfect Union. Joining these legislators is an Iowa activist who has been at many of the protests, Yena Baltikiani.
We are in a year 2020 and already across the nation, we have lost so many Black lives to police brutality.
Balakiani says people in Black and brown neighborhoods are more susceptible to police violence.
Even though we make up 13% of the U.S. populations, we are two and a half times as much as white Americans to be shot and killed by police officers. This is a calamity that we all must work to end together.
Legislators have 3 proposals in their More Perfect Union package. Democratic Representative Roz Smith introduces them.
First, this legislation will protect Iowans by ensuring that no Iowan is held in a chokehold by Iowa law enforcement. Second, this legislation will help Iowa communities by ensuring that they're protected and served by the nation's best, by the nation's finest. Police departments will be banned from hiring officers who have previously been fired or resigned due to serious misconduct. Lastly, this legislation will bring justice to more Iowans by ensuring that both the Attorney General and county attorneys have the power to investigate misconduct.
Representative Smith says this is an example of turning outrage into organizing.
This is where we turn our organizing into ordinances that make sure that our state, our union, are more fair than they've ever been, are more just than we could ever imagine, and one day, we'll make our union more perfect. Thank you. We stand in solidarity. and my life matters.
30 minutes later, the governor holds a scheduled press conference. She is asked about the More Perfect Union proposal and says she just heard about it, but she wants to meet with these leaders soon and listen.
I'm sure the legislature has an opportunity to address and have those same conversations as we are going to have. I'm hoping we met, you know, throughout the weekend with Akeo and with Isaiah and Betty and just a whole host of individuals, law enforcement, elected officials, to talk about how we can continue to have movement and to make sure that we're implementing those conversations. So we'll touch base again this weekend. And then in addition to that, we're going to stand up the focus committee so we can continue to work through some of these issues.
The governor says she will meet with her focus committee later in June. Focus stands for Fueling Ongoing Collaboration and Uncovering Solutions. The governor established this group last fall. It has 14 people on it, including Betty Andrews. Their goal last year was to recommend policies to reduce recidivism and racial disparities in Iowa's criminal justice system. This is the Legislative Podcast Under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pimble.
A good civics lesson teaches you how to be an engaged citizen, and listening to Under the Golden Dome helps you be an engaged Iowan. When you become a member of Iowa Public Radio, you support coverage that keeps you engaged and informed. Give now at iowapublicradio.org/donate. It takes just a few minutes to make a powerful impact.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association and by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including Above and Beyond Cancer.
For 12 weeks, the legislative session was paused. Coming back to the Capitol is a new experience for everyone. Access to the chambers is limited to legislators and some staff. There are no clerks or pages. Members of the media cannot sit in their chamber floor benches, but can observe from a reserved gallery. Committees are now held in the chambers. When the session paused in March, it was during a week where there was a deadline known as the second funnel. This is where bills have to advance out of most committees to remain viable. As the session resumes, the second funnel deadline is moved to June 6th. A constitutional amendment that would automatically restore felon voting rights needs to pass out of the Senate Judiciary Committee by the weekend, or it will become ineligible. Let's go back to the first week of this year's session in January, when Governor Kim Reynolds delivers her condition of the state.
I am renewing my support to amend our Constitution so that it no longer bars felons from voting after they've served their sentence.
Iowa is the only state not allowing anyone with a felony conviction to vote unless the governor grants a reinstatement request.
I'm grateful to the House for starting this process last year by approving the constitutional amendment with a strong bipartisan vote of 95-2. I also appreciate the productive conversations we're having with senators, and I look forward to continuing to work with you to pass the amendment and craft an implementing statute that lets us avoid the confusion and lawsuits that have plagued other states' restoration efforts.
The Senate would not take up this resolution, H.J.R. 14, in a judiciary committee unless a separate bill would put conditions on the restoration of felon voting rights. In March, the Senate passed a bill that would not automatically restore the voting rights for those convicted of a homicide or sexual assault. Restoration in these examples would require a person to apply to the governor. Another aspect of the bill requires victim restitution to be paid in full. This week, that bill comes before the House of Representatives. It is floor managed by Republican Representative Bobby Kaufman.
A year ago, I ran the bill, H.J.R. 14, off this floor with two no votes that would set in motion a process for Iowans to be able to vote on whether they think that felons should have the opportunity to vote. But when I said those remarks, I made it crystal clear that we would be back to define what discharge of sentence means. And that's what this bill does this evening.
Democratic Representative Mary Wolf says this bill gives someone with more money an unfair advantage.
This bill just perpetuates a cycle that we have seen over and over again where people with money get a better deal. People with money get the breaks. Under this bill, a person convicted, two people convicted of the exact same felony, who did the exact same crime, who owed the exact same amount of money to their respective victims, if one of them can write a check and pay that victim, that person gets to vote. If one of them is on Social Security and barely has enough money to pay their rent and a teeny tiny bit of food, and so can never ever pay their victim restitution, that person never ever gets to vote.
Democratic Representative Bruce Hunter says it is morally wrong for economic status to play a role in whether a person can have their voting rights restored.
If you have a system that you knowingly are forcing somebody to pay for the right to vote, and you know they can't pay it, that's a poll tax, and that's putting another impediment in front of somebody's right to vote and in front of somebody's right to join society.
Democratic Representative Roz Smith says as an African American, he's 11 times more likely to receive a felony than a white person.
That's an injustice in our system that inflates legislation like this, or the fact that from a person of color in the state of Iowa, my median household income is just over $27,000, while my white counterparts is just over $54,000. That right there is an injustice in the system that this legislation will amplify.
Democratic Representative Heather Mattson says the bill brings out systemic racial and economic inequities.
Several months ago, I had the opportunity to participate in a prison reentry simulation. I learned so much, and if you have not done this, I strongly encourage you to do so. I know you'll learn a lot too. One of my biggest takeaways was how much the deck is stacked against individuals as they reenter society. It is exceptionally hard to get a job. It can be exceptionally hard to make ends meet. And if you are poor in Iowa, the deck is absolutely stacked against you.
Several Democrats rise to oppose the bill, but Representative Kaufman is the only Republican to speak. In his closing remarks, Kaufman talks about the use of the term poll tax.
I heard the word pay for play and poll tax repeatedly. It's a good political catchphrase, but it's not accurate. You can say it over and over and over again, but the courts simply disagree with you. A poll tax is when you require money paid back to a government. A poll tax is when you require government being paid back to a corporation. A poll tax is when you require paid back fines.
Kaufman also says his concern is about the victims of crimes.
If I've got a carometer for the rights of the victim, it's up here. And if I've got a carometer for the rights of the people that committed the crimes and hurt them, it's a lot lower. One of the big stories I heard at the subcommittee was how unfair it is, and I'll share the example with you, Representative Stade, how wholly unfair it is that someone could commit vehicular manslaughter, spend their time in prison, serve out a 15-year sentence, owe $200,000, and it's just so unfair that they can't vote. You know what's unfair? The person being dead.
This bill passes the House. The next day, Governor Reynolds signs it into law. This law will only apply if the constitutional amendment is passed, which at this point has not. On Friday night, the Senate chamber is used to hold the Judiciary Committee for H.J.R. 14.
Are there any senators, we are in subcommittee, that would like to talk about this important resolution?
Senator Brad Zahn is the chair. While this is a full committee meeting, there are rules that allow it to switch to a subcommittee.
So there is someone in the gallery, is that correct? Okay.
Normally, committees and subcommittees are in smaller rooms. For those who wish to comment on a proposal, they may do so now from the gallery with a microphone. The governor's legislative liaison, Logan Shine, speaks from the gallery to the subcommittee.
The governor is strongly supportive of this constitutional amendment, recognizing that once an individual discharges their sentence, that they have the right to vote. We strongly urge you to consider recommending passage of this bill.
After the subcommittee approves the resolution, the judiciary switches to full committee mode. Republican Senator Amy Sinclair is part of this committee and speaks in opposition to the resolution.
I've wavered back and forth on weighing in on this issue until right now. I've remained largely silent so that my personal experiences didn't cloud the decision-making of this body. I want to begin by saying emphatically that I believe in second chances. God knows I've received enough of my own. I believe that people deserve to be heard, and they deserve an opportunity to live again. And I respect our governor more than I can tell you, and I know that what she's trying to accomplish here is honorable. But I'm also compelled to speak on behalf of victims today because I truly feel like no one else is.
Senator Sinclair gives examples of who should have a second chance, like those with drug convictions or property damage.
Let's please agree, folks, that these people absolutely deserve a second chance, and then that process to attain it should at a minimum not be onerous and preferably automatic. I agree. But what about when you've taken from someone their very life, wantonly disregarded the value of another human being, or violently violated a child sexually, raped a woman and left her body bloody and shattered, and her soul empty in ways that no one can even describe.
Senator Sinclair doesn't support the resolution, even though there is already a law that was signed earlier this week that does not allow automatic restoration of voting rights for those convicted of murder.
HJR 14 is a slap in the face of the victims who should never have had to experience the pain and loss dealt to them. How can we sit here and disregard the victims by supporting this bill as it's currently written?
Republican Senator Dan Dawson is asked to deliver closing comments. Dawson is brief.
I'm just sorry for anyone's hurt by the vote that we're going to take here. I just want to extend my apologies. I move HJR 14.
How would you like to vote? Roll call has been requested.
The resolution passes this committee 10-4. Voting against are Senators Sinclair, Julian Garrett, Tom Shipley, and Zach Whiting. It is now eligible to be brought before the full Senate. Legislative leaders have made rule changes that are making the legislative process move faster. It's possible the session will end within a week. House Majority Leader Matt Winchell isn't promising that'll happen, but...
The hope is that we can find resolution on everything that we need to find resolution on and move forward with the business of the people of Iowa and sine die next week, but I cannot give you an absolute guarantee.
A big challenge ahead is releasing budget targets and finalizing those numbers in less than a week. Help for this episode comes from Iowa Public Radio Statehouse reporter Katerina Sestarik. She has many stories from this week at iowapublicradio.org. This episode also got some help from IPR reporters Grant Gerlach and Natalie Krebs. The script editor for this episode is IPR News Director Michael Leland. We have some support from our digital team, Lindsay Moon and Matt Siren. Members of the Capitol Press Pool provide invaluable feedback and collaboration, even as we are all working together from a distance. I'm John Pemble. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.